Warrior football. True Warrior football. True Warrior football.
You are listening to True Warrior Football Podcast with your host, Corey Kid Smith.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. We are back, and man, when I tell you this show right here, I really don't want to talk that long because that's how good this episode is. This interview is definitely one I've been chasing. Like I said before on the show, I've had a list of guys I've been wanting to get for a long time, and people have been elusive, man, trying to get some of these guys, like trying to catch those rare Pokemon and stuff like that. You know, some guys are shy, some guys don't want to talk, share their stories, which is fine. I can understand that. But, man, I've been doing this show for, 4 years now, 4 seasons at least. And it's still difficult to get some guys. But this one I finally got. And, man, look, it didn't dawn on me until the end of the episode how truly special this moment was. And you'll see, you'll hear me talk about it there. But trust me, this is definitely a great one. So, with no further ado, ladies and gentlemen, get your popcorn ready and get ready to listen to our guy, Chris Graham, a.k.a. Brick. All right, ladies and gentlemen, like, when I tell you I have a list of greats I've always wanted to get on the show, a list of people that I have profound levels of respect for, this individual is definitely one of those. He's synonymous with the position. He's one of the all-time great offense, defense to ever play in the program. I consider him one of the favorite defensive players of all time. He's right there with Jeremy Finch for me. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show for the very first time, Brick. Mr. Chris Graham. Chris, how you doing, my brother?
Hey, I'm doing good, brother. Good to hear from you.
The pleasure and honor is all mine, man. Like, seriously, I've been watching your videos and stuff. You're a hard dude to get in touch with, man, but I'm glad we was able to finally connect.
I'm right there, man.
Well, that's good, man. That's good. Now, I know we in a good time right now. See, because of you, you may not know this, but because of you, I have been a Michigan Wolverine fan. Because of you and you going there, I was like, man, dude, Michigan is all-time great. And then I fell in love with Virginia Tech when Darren went there. And it's been either Virginia Tech and Michigan neck and neck for like the last 15 years and stuff. I've been watching college football. Virginia Tech ain't on that level right now. Michigan is. Okay.
We on top
where it's supposed to be. And then, you know, before I get into this season with you, like, I must say, I was very critical of the current program, the state of things, everything under Jim Harbaugh. Before, when Jim got hired, I met him and he did a great birthday shout out video for my father, for my father. And it was great. I've been loving Jim, been loving him. But, you know, the losses against Ohio State kept adding and adding up. And I was like, man, look, I love Jim, but if we lose one more time, he got to go. I was saying that last year before last season started. Then COVID started. And then all that season, we went like 2-4, 2-5, something like that. Kind of like down on playing Ohio State, whatever. And then playing no games the rest of the year, it's like, hey, this dude got a role. But they gave him another chance. And
well, I mean, because you can't really take him down off of that. I mean, you got to give benefit of doubt if somebody going to show their true potential. Give them a full season. Give them a chance to say, you know, let me make some adjustments.
Yeah.
And then go from there. I mean, they wanted to fire Lloyd Carr every year I was there. You know, but, you know, I won the Big Ten championship my first year. The next year, we're number two in the nation, and number two and three. And then, you know, next year was kind of a little bit lower year. Then my senior year was kind of mediocre on that point. But they wanted to fire him every single time they could. And it just be like that because as fans, we want to win every big game.
Correct.
And as a big program like that, you know, of course they want to win the season, but more importantly, the rivalry games, that's where boosters come and get the most money. So you're going to hear a lot of backlash because there's money involved. It's much more than just the win, it's money.
Yeah, I get that. And, you know, I did see, you know, with the shutdown happening and everything last year, I was like, okay, bring them back. If things don't change, if no progress is being made, then obviously under this full season, things got to go different. You got to go different direction. I hated to say that, but I felt like it was the truth because many other coaches at high profile programs would have been let go for less. You know what I'm saying? And it's, you know, the program, it is what it is, but he pulled it off this year. I kept it as I'm watching the game against Ohio State. I'm like, all right, I'm just thinking the other shoe going to drop. I'm thinking these dudes about to go on this 20-point run in 5 minutes, yeah. And it's going to be the same sing song over and again. But it didn't happen. And I'm still stunned that I even watched it. I made a joke on Facebook. I said, I can't believe I've lived long enough to see Michigan beat Ohio State. Like, it's
– you're taking it hard, eh?
Man.
Hey, people forgot. Like I said, people forgot that every year I was there, it was a 3-point to 7-point difference.
Yes.
And I believe two out of my 4 years, we were robbed. You can tell it went down to one penalty call every single time. But they're good. I don't ever knock them. This is a good program. But when it's time to play, I hate you. And I want to win. I want them to win. So when I was watching the game go down, I watched how my defense react. And the way my defense was reacting, I knew it wasn't going to be a chance for them to get going. Because as long as we were stuffing their offense, that gave us more chances to make up. You know, they started out with a couple big plays in there, but that defense was hot. Once that defense hot, it's over with.
Yeah, once Aiden and Ojabo got going, it was tough. And they got some other cats over there, but Hassan Haskins rushing for was like 190 something and 5 touchdowns. I didn't see that coming, but I'm glad it happened. I'm certainly glad it happened.
Hey,
your boy Mike Hart over there coaching him up, man.
I already knew when Mike get there, it's smash mouth football. that was like the days we were there in practice. And the way he was running was exactly Fred Jackson taught Mike how to be elusive, but at the same time, run people over. It's funny. This is back to old school football. Yes. And when I seen Haskins running like that, I said, it's over. It's over with. He got that in his mind. He got that type of running. It's over with. You can tell in any other game before that, he runs good. But that game, he turned it on. And that was very key. That was very key for the whole team stepping up that game.
Indeed. And so the Iowa game, I kind of was feeling like it was going to be a little bit of a trap game for us in the first half, or really the first quarter. We had those two big plays. We had the two big plays for touchdowns, and then things kind of got stagnant for us. 14-3 in the halftime. I'm like, all right, come on now. Let's get this thing going. Second half, it was, all right, we're Michigan. These guys are good, but they aren't us. So we got to remember who we are, who they are, and assert ourselves. And that's what we saw. Smash mouth football. We got ugly and just brought it on home. 40-point dub.
Hey, some of those plays, I'm still scratching my head. Like one hand catches.
I know.
You know, tiptoes catches.
It was almost like it was meant to be. Like we fought hard to get here. We just not going to come up short at the end. Like, come on. So we got that dub. And, you know, it just really, we get to Indy and I'm like, oh, that's incredible. It really is incredible. And now we got the upcoming game against Georgia. And really, after seeing what Georgia happened to them against Alabama, you know, I thought they were a little bit tougher than they were, but now, like, these boys can be had. It is college football, and anybody can be had on any night. We've seen upsets all the time. But, like, these dudes, they were looking like world beaters. But now they're like, all right, we can go in there and really do some things, man. What are your thoughts on the upcoming game against Georgia?
I always liked Georgia. I always liked Georgia as a kid coming up. And I've been watching this season. And when they get the ball rolling, they run. You know, they get the rolling. So I think we evenly matched coming in the game as offense. Their defense is strong, just like our defense.
Yeah.
It pretty much comes down to strategy. Whose strategy is going to work? Are we going to watch film and look at their miscues and, you know, see if we can use them? Or they're going to look at ours and see if they can use them. But I know for sure that Michigan come with our support and how big we are, just as big as their following is as well. If we can hit them in the mouth early, it's going to change. It's definitely going to change them. So, my bad there.
You good? Are you going to try and go to the game?
No, I'm gonna have to miss that one. I'm trying to see if I can catch. If we go to the ship, I gotta go.
Yeah, I mean it's at the crib.
At the crib.
We gotta be there. You gotta represent. I mean that would be that. That's just too much like right. And you know, with this game, the one I'm not worried about their quarterback, Georgia's quarterback, that much. He's a good player. But he's not a dynamic player like what we would see if we were faced Bryce Young. Really, he may be the worst quarterback of the four teams that have made the playoff. I think Desmond, the Cincinnati quarterback, is much better than him. And I think
Cincinnati quarterback is a beast. That's a whole different monster.
Yeah.
I mean, they do good. But, I mean, as I said, if our defense comes and smash that offense up and keep giving us chances, Michigan gonna eat. We're gonna eat off of that. So the thing is I hate the long wait. I hate the long process where you have to wait and wait and wait to prepare. And it messes up
preparation.
Yeah. It messes up preparation for us to really, like, you know, keep that momentum going and stay hot and that chip on your shoulder. So hopefully we can dial in with that much, build the edge off of it. I know when we went into our bowl games, anytime we had a break, because that's the biggest break we had, we kind of went off the energy that their team was giving off, like especially the Gators. After, you know, they was trash talking, you know, from all the way from practice all the way up. So when we got the game day, it was like, I'm about to hit Tebow in the mouth, you know, and shut him down, and that's going to mess up everybody else. And that's the game plan we had. You know, take the main guy out, and it's going to mess everybody else. Even though he played a good game, we conquered that part overall. So hopefully they can bring that same type of energy.
It is real interesting that you brought up the breaks. Before we get to the Florida game, I had to get to a game before that. You played in the Rose Bowl against Texas and Vince Young. The year before, Texas would go back to the national championship game and win against USC. Yeah. And like and back in those days, there was no Big Ten championship. So after the Ohio State game, if you were that highly ranked, you were going to the Rose Bowl. So that was a must.
You go right there. That's a must, yeah.
Yeah, that's a full month being off, like, that is like, do a lot of players like really just get that in their mindset where all year they're being in this groove and, you know, they're working, they're practicing, they're doing all this stuff. And then boom, you got to get out of it because there's no game where you can't go full bore during that off time. Did that mess you up a lot of times, or was it something that you had to really get adjusted to?
it's like a hot and cold thing because when they move you from, you know, your university, you're practicing and everything like that, you go out there and it's almost like a vacation starting out. And, you know, everybody welcome you with warm arms and you got to do all your media stuff and interviews and everything like that. And then your practices are adjusting to the weather, a new location, and trying to get scouting reports of, you know, this team, trying to get it down packed, trying to get scout teams to run it perfectly to imitate this other team. And it kind of throws you off. There's so much other stuff going on that maybe with this college playoffs is a little bit different because you might take your media stuff out the way and it's still, you know, preparation to mm-hmm. that point. I don't know whenever they transfer the teams down there to this location, but, you know, we were there for a month whenever we went to these bowls. We were at the bowl for a month training. And it threw you off a little bit, but it depends on, you know, what we had planned. I know, you know, especially in our last bowl game, we had a point to prove to win that for our coach and make our season, you know, come out with a big bang. And we had something to prove that we, the North versus the South, you know, Big Ten versus SEC. And we got something to prove every time we played them anyway. So
exactly.
We had to step up. So it was a different edge. And, you know, you face it and different things. The Rose Bowl, that's a whole different monster. It's so much going on over there for the Rose Bowl because that's elite. And as I'm telling you, like, this is so much media stuff going on, so much different things. These coaches are trying to keep these players focused. And that's why, you know, you got itinerary is so tight through the whole day because they're trying to keep the focus of what's going on. You know, it's just how you dial in. You know, if you got a big opponent like this game coming up, I'm pretty sure everybody be dialed in, you know. No one be pretty much off in the space, you know, thinking it's more of a vacation instead of business.
Do you think it's harder for today's athlete with everything that's going on outside the game, NIL stuff, social media stuff? You know, everybody wants to be a TikToker, big YouTube star and everything like this, build their brand. Do you think it's harder for today's athlete to stay focused leading up to these big games and big moments like that?
It shouldn't be. It should be the same way it's always been. It comes down to the coaches. Are we preparing these students, student athletes to, hey, we're not engaging into too much of this. I want everybody to stay focused. I want nobody doing this or doing that, even though they have the right to express, but you can control your organization by shutting down certain output at that moment. If you need guys to dial in, and you can say it in the meeting, but then that's when the old heads of the team step up and they'll shut it down. I don't want nobody doing this. I don't want nobody doing this. Everybody's focused. So it shouldn't get carried away too much unless, you know, you're one of those loose coaches that just let your team do whatever. And I don't think none of these coaches out there right now are letting their students just go out there and free fall. No, you're still responsible for them because whatever goes out on social media reflects your culture. So these coaches, like our coaches did, they locked it down as soon as we had Facebook involved and everything else started coming along. You lock certain things down and you have it a certain way that you want them to represent themselves, to represent your organization and their focus. So it shouldn't be no different. You just have to adjust with the time of how things are transitioning that we have instead of one social media outlet that was big, one or two. Now you have several. How do I shut down several? That's where your media people come in and talk and start speaking to these students and tell them the do's and don'ts. You know, that's covered in the beginning. And his coach, as he's going through in his preparation week, how he's shutting down things for that week going up for it. So these guys should be definitely dialed in and not losing focus on trying to get a TikTok video out.
Indeed. And, you know, a lot of times I see guys wanting to be that way, but then, you know, there are guys that aren't all the way bought in that messes it up. And then they'll be like, oh, well, why is such touchdown playing? and nobody understands, but people behind the scenes know. And you know, it may cost that person a full game. And if they're an important person, it could hurt the team. And then now because his selfish actions, everybody had to be responsible for it. But I mean, it sucks.
Yeah, it happens. It's always from siblings to a university team. You only have that one that always bump his head. And then we just adjust. That's all you do. You just adjust, keep going forward. Now, hopefully that example rubs off to everybody else.
Hopefully so. Now, like I said, you guys were playing in the Rose Bowl, an absolutely amazing game against Texas. You came up short, unfortunately. But, I mean, Vince Young was putting on – he was in the midst of an incredible run of performance there, man. Like, what can you say about playing against him? You weren't on the sidelines. You was actually on the field going toe-to-toe with a college football great. Like, what was that like for you?
I'll tell you, one point of the game, I turned into a fan. I'm standing on the sideline, and some of our starters are out at that time, and he breaks. He breaks a couple tackles and he takes off. He just tucking and run. And all you see was flashes of light from everywhere in the stadium. Just click, 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 click. And I was like, wow. As he run, it looked like he was running slow motion. I became a fan watching that one play. Like, dang, no matter how bad he just cut up on us right there. It looked amazing. And that,
he looked
in that stadium,
like he was. He just looked like he was just a guy that was just like impossible to get down. Like you couldn't.
Well, it's that spread. That spread had just came out, you know, that whole new setup. And you got a fast running quarterback that can throw and run. He's a dual threat. You don't know which one to cover. You don't know the cover pass or the run. And when he take off, that's instantly team immediately. And then if he get more after that, you know, good luck trying to take down a guy that big, you know. So we strategized for it all day long. Nobody can imitate somebody who's a great like that. Yeah, we just had to contain him. I guarantee we probably had played him second time. We would have probably had a better strategy for him. But I had turned into a fan. He was amazing on that play. I think a couple other plays he had in. But when it was my turn to go in, I was trying to make sure that I do what I normally do, run through you. And sometimes I couldn't get him. I think I blitzed. And by the time I got there, he took two steps to the right and he took off. He had 10 that quick. So, hey, it was a heck of a game. It was definitely a heck of a game. It was something I'm not even mad at. I'm not mad at all. I was just glad I was a part of it because that's something right there that I wish we won. But at the same time, that experience that I can tell everybody else, like, you don't get that every day.
Indeed. And now moving on to your senior year. All right. I want to tell the story, and I promise, Rick, I don't mean any disrespect to you or the guys that are on the team, but man, dog, tell me how the season opened up, because and it's funny how it things started. Okay, because that opening week, this is 2007 season, was also my first year in college football, being a manager with West Kentucky football. We opened up the season in Gainesville against Tim Tebow in Florida. And mm-hmm. I remember somebody was telling me, giving me updates on the Michigan-Appalachian State game, and I didn't know where Appalachian State was. I'm thinking it's in the boonies somewhere. And they just keep giving me updates. I'm like, that ain't that, you got that wrong. And at the end, like, they just tell me Appalachian State beat Michigan at the Big House. I was like, dog, you gotta be kidding me. That can't be right. Like I know that's gotta be one of the things you just it has to keep you up at night sometimes, still, man.
Nah, man, I don't sit here trying to replay that, you know, something that you bite your lip on and you keep going. You understand that sometimes if you're not prepped the way that you want to, you know, it kind of sucks that, you know, the outcome is somebody might cut up and just have more yards on you in the game. Even though you won, you might look bad because you wasn't fully prepared. A running quarterback, he's a short version of Vince Young. Fast as all get out. And he had skilled guys on the outside that were fast as all get out. And you take those type of guys as an offense and you play and spray it. You know, we try to, you know, study our best for it. We try to have our scout guys, but anybody that was moving like that, unless we put one of the wide receivers like Mario to put in there, but we had nobody really to do the jukes or anything like that. So when we spread out, he was great. He was gaining 10, you know, off jump. He'll fake it, this and that. We'll cover that, we'll spy, and boom, he'll still get 10 by the time we hit him. So coming down to the last play, you know, just the error on holding the edge, and the guy got there. They played a hell of a game. I can't tell people enough. You forgot they're champions. So yeah. let's not look down on them. They've been champions for years.
And went on to win the FCS championship that year as well.
Exactly. So they're an undefeated team. A lot of those guys are in the NFL or was in the NFL during my time. So we can't look past them like they wasn't nothing. They just in a different division. And they got to prove themselves against an unprepared team. I wouldn't say unprepared, just not really used to seeing spread, because even the next week when we seen spread again, it shows similar results because we wasn't used to that setup. And that's something that, you know, you can't beat yourself up on. You just say, hey, on to the next one. You realize where you got beat at, I'm not going to get beat again. And some of the Big Ten teams try afterwards, and we wasn't going for it no more. We were able to correct those issues. But it stuck only because the fans wouldn't let it go. We let it go because it's on to the next team and move on. And we know how good they were from there. So, I mean, as a player, you already know, like, hey, that was a good game played by them. But you say it, you don't skip to this day. What about Appalachian State? I'm like, what about them? They were champion, and they were good. They won that game. You know, there's nothing I can do to take that back. Did it mess up the season that we prepared? Heck yeah. We was prepared to make it all the way through until it got to Ohio State, as always. But, you know, we met our match that week. We met our match definitely against Oregon. Oregon
beasted that game. Oregon had a good team that year. I think
I'm trying to think of the quarterback. Donald, is it Donald?
I don't know.
Donald, let's start with a D.
It may have been Dixon.
Dixon. That was it. He's stupid fast. Stupid fast. You watch the film over and over.
That's what Oregon had, those new Nike jerseys with the diamond plates on the pad, which were probably the coldest jerseys
in college
football at the time.
They tight ends ran a 4.4. So I don't care what nobody say. When you got a dude that's 6++ and he's taking off down the field and he's like running faster than his wide receivers, my DBs couldn't even jump up and catch that tree. They couldn't get up there. That tree just caught the ball and blew a bulldoze. We had to knock him over by taking his legs out. It was just outmatched.
That's incredible. So, like, it's in just 3 years' time, all right, you face off against a great Vince Young. You faced off against Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith. Then you end your college career against another college great in Tim Tebow. All right. Run me through like that. Like you said, that week had been an emotional, or really lead up to that game had been an emotional event. Coach Carr's last game, Coach Lloyd Carr was retiring, stepping down as being the head coach. You said a lot of you guys felt like it was on you to send him out the best way possible. You had this Florida team that was stacked. Previous year, they won a national championship. They brought a lot of those guys back and some guys that were that was some really good talent. And Tim Tebow, like I said, had a record-breaking season in the SEC, was a Heisman Trophy winner. Like, that game right there, as a Michigan fan at the time, I was like, dog, we got to come up with some magic, some miracles to get this. And we were in that game toe for toe, blow for blow with them, mm-hmm. giving it to them and letting it, like you said before, you know, hey, the North play good football just as well as you guys in the South. And mm-hmm. let it be known. I don't think it was like an 8-point win. I think I had to look it up right here in a moment. Hold on, let me see.
It was close.
Yeah. But at the end, we ended up winning. That was a team, like you said, had Tim Tebow. We're going to NFL. Aaron Hernandez going to the NFL. The Pouncey Twins.
Percy Harvin.
There was another one. Grant Delpit, I think, was on that team too.
No. Mm-hmm. And then the close to the slot. I think the running back slot was one of them.
Yeah. They had talent all over the field. And people make a saying, well, no, Michigan had talent all over the field that year too. And so leading into that game, we were seen as, you know, it was going to be a blowout. Michigan can't compete. And you guys made it happen, man. How did you guys make it happen?
We big checked ourselves after those two L's. It was a young, you had half of the roster that was young. And then that's all about our leadership as seniors, leading those guys just like the seniors led us when we first got there. You know, we just had to turn the table and say, hey, you know, this is the way Michigan plays football and we need to adjust. You know, yeah, we got caught off guard, not being prepared like you want to, but that's no excuse. You got to play the next week after that. So we improved all the way to that point, going against all these top players and everything like that. So for the guys whose last game it meant a lot, right along with Coach. You're never going to step off that field without giving your all. So we're going to step on this field. You're not coming off the field unless you're getting carried off. And they took that same approach. And everything you do, I'm going to stretch out. And if I got to catch a ball across the middle, in the middle of traffic, you got to do what you got to do. If you got to take on three people at once to get to that person on the other side, you know, that's what you got to do. And so we buried that. And this was the focus you're talking about. Just like these guys getting ready for these bowl games, our focus was so tight that game. It was probably one of the tightest focus I've been in any bowl game I ever had. And it was a lot of anger. It was being pissed off about all the previous, you know, games we played in, especially the media writing us off. And to try to take away what my coach has accomplished through his history, just like that, just because you want him gone, you know, we can't have that. So let's go ahead and compete in this game, show them who we really are, show them that Lloyd Carr definitely can coach, still here at his level if you want to, and then Tebow. We started hearing Tebow talk so much that week that we probably could have remixed everything he said. It was that many interviews he gave and that many things he said. So we had came into the locker room just after warmups, and they got the locker room yamming. That locker room is banging over there. They got all the top songs playing. And there we shared a door, and we didn't even know we shared a door. And they banging on the door, and they talking mad cash. And you can hear them yelling through the door directly at us, telling us they can call us out. They call us out by name. They call us out, you know, by the team, you know, and it's getting nasty on the door. And my coach.
Which one?
Ron English. Defense coach Ron English.
Ron English.
He wrote this letter, and he went and act like he got it from underneath the door. And he said, Florida wrote this letter, sent it to me, and passed it around. And I forget what it said, but it was pretty much like they were calling us out.
Okay.
And now you're talking about, it was quiet. It was kind of quiet in there for a minute. You know, while they were banging the door, they was through the roof. And when that letter came through, we lost it. I'm talking about now we fired up. You know, everybody in the locker room fired up. The offense, they got fired up right along with the defense, and we lost it. We came out of that locker room, it's over. It's over. Y'all up here talking cash. I done wrote these letters. I done did all. Crazy thing is cash, but it was a good strategy from coach because we was too, we was quiet, but we was ready. And that extra edge right there set the tone on every single play after that. It set the tone on every single play. It's like, you're going to basically come down here, Big Ten versus SEC, and they already looking down at you, and they talking cash and pretty much trying to intimidate us and bully us. It ain't going to happen today, brother. It ain't.
Yeah, that sounds like some stuff, you know, Coach Tutsi, Coach Massey would have did back in the day. And it's awesome to hear. Maybe Coach Clayton, too. It's awesome to hear that story. Ron English was a good dude, man. The couple times I was able to meet him in passing when he came into the building to recruit some of our guys, he always seemed like a real solid dude, man.
Like, he has the funniest strategies by far. He has the funniest strategies to get your attention by far. We can tell stories about him all day long. And at the end of the day, Coach will come hug you and love you like a son. So, big, mad respect for Coach. I love him to death. Half the time I wanted to kill him in practice because he kept yelling at me. But I love him to death.
You know, you're not going to ever love a coach if he don't piss you off and stuff like that, man.
Exactly.
If a coach don't make you mad, then you don't really care about him. Like, man, I don't care.
Exactly. So that was a funny strategy. He wrote that letter. And I still tell people this day, I said, hey, man, Coach wrote that letter, didn't he? He was like, hey, I think he did.
It was I just looked up the score. It was 41-35. And yeah, you guys held your own, man. Held your own. Yeah. Outscored them in the fourth quarter. You know, did what you had to do to go out on top. You know, which is what, see, that's the thing, man. College football is just, it's such a great thing when it's going and when it's working really well. It's a thing of beauty. It really is.
Oh, yeah. It's way livelier than NFL. Like, the energy from your teammates and then the energy from the crowd. Like, I can watch college football any day over NFL.
All day. Like I was saying a couple weeks ago when it was rivalry week, so I started off watching Ohio State get their butts kicked by us. Then was watching what other game was on after that? Then
OSU, Oklahoma.
OSU, Oklahoma, which, no, hold on. Yeah, OSU, Oklahoma was later tonight. It was Auburn, Alabama, and then it was Minnesota, Wisconsin. No, that was the day before. Was it? Hold on.
Was it Iowa State?
Iowa State was, no, that was earlier in the year. But basically, that whole Saturday, I was watching nothing but college football because it was great. And there were great games and everything like that. And like, even if watching NFL, you know, you may have one or two really good games that are lit. But a lot of times you have a team like, I'm a Bears fan. So you have my Bears get their butts beat and embarrassed on national TV by the Packers last night for the sixth time in a row. You don't have atmosphere and love like that in a college atmosphere. I wish it was the same, but it just ain't. But yeah. You leave Michigan and then you have a couple stints in the NFL. You play with the Saints for a little bit. Tell me what your professional experience was like playing pro ball.
First of all, it's just a blessing to even reach that level.
Indeed. Indeed.
Having an opportunity to be on those teams, man, it's crazy. But it's totally different than what people think. It's like standing on the highway. Well, standing by the highway and somebody kick you out there. And somebody kick you out there, now you got to move and do everything at that pace or you're going to get ran over. So people don't know the business side of it. People don't know the playing side of it. So my whole experience was so fast because being undrafted, that's like taking a guy on your team that you didn't really put a lot of money in. And being that, you know, you on this team, you're trying to find a place for, you know, a right position so you can keep growing. You don't necessarily get a lot of mentors. You don't get you don't have 4 years from freshman to senior. And it, like I said, it starts fast. So when you get there, you know, they're looking for you to perform. They want to see you run. They want to see you twist and turn and do this and that right away. And then on top of that, they're going to send this big encyclopedia playbook in your lap. And it says, you know, here you go. We'll go over a couple plays here and there, but it's your job to already study these. And that's the difference importance. You hear about these stories where they talk about the college quarterback studying like they're in the NFL, and you got the NFL guys studying. But no one really tells you, hey, this is your life right here. You know, this is what you need to do day and night. This is your job. You know, it's something that you need to sleep with. But also regurgitate it the next day, you know, and it's tough. It's definitely tough. But it was so cool, man. Going back to just the point of just being there. When I got down to the Saints and I'm practicing with these guys, and I run down and they go Reggie Bush. He catches the ball in front of me. And I'm like, I'm about to show him I'm just as fast, you know. I get down there in front of him. I break down, ready to move. He takes 2 steps and it's like, where you go? He up the field. He gone. He gone that quick. He like, choo-choo. It's like, dang. And then what happened to me? I turned into a fan. That was cool. Hey, and they blow the whistle. Get back to the play. You gotta come back and do it again. You know? So you got to remember that you're there for work. And you ain't there for, you know, picking up your phone, taking pictures, and being a fan. You still got work to do. And it's a shocker, man. Like I said, I still praise God for giving me the opportunity to even be there. And that was so cool. Now, I will hate, because if they would have kept me, I would have had a ring that year. I would have had a ring that year. We brought in Jeremy Shockey, and we cut a lot of guys off the team for Jeremy Shockey. And he didn't even do nothing. Yeah, I was one of the victims. And then he didn't even do nothing. I said, man, you cost me my ring. And you just sat there and got a ring, you know.
Which was his second one, because he got one previously with the Giants.
With the Giants, yeah.
And I think he was hurt in that game or something like that. He was only able to play in the same. He played in as far as 2 Super Bowl winning teams. He didn't get to play with the Giants when they won. And then with the Saints, he played a little bit, but he didn't score, I don't believe. But that's interesting at the same time. Do you ever think back to what you could have done better leading up to the draft so you don't go undrafted? Or was this something that you feel like was out of your control?
It was out of my control. Like I said, I did things in preparation to get there as far as I was. You know, it's also representation. So it's like you're picking the right representative, you know, your agent. You want an agent with a little bit more pull so you can get through the doors and have those people start now looking at your guy. So I wasn't in control of that, really. You know, you just get an agent. And I met so many agents that talk so fast that you, as a person who need somebody who needs somebody by their side who has experience of picking the right guy. I really didn't have no one around me like that at that time. So a lot of my meetings were solo dolo, and everybody's just talking fast. When I say talking fast, they're talking super fast. You don't know if they're going to steal your money out of your pocket, how fast they're talking. And they're like, here, sign on the dotted line. Yeah. So I didn't really know about a lot of agents. I didn't know their backgrounds, reviews, anything like that, that you can find out today versus back then. So I could have probably picked a better agent during that time, but I went with the guy who was less, you know, forceful at that time. And that probably cost me on that experience. So I needed experience there and right there. But the training part, I put on 20 pounds, still running 4.4. I performed, you know, to the best of my ability, which gave me the top 3 workout out of all the linebackers in the nation. Now, you got 200 some linebackers, and I'm up in the top 3 as my workout, and I'm ranked in the top 15. I think that, you know, that's pretty good. to go to the next level. So when I prepared for my pro, I mean, for my draft day, and I watched Sean Crable go in the second round, I'm excited. I'm geeked. I'm excited for him as he worked his butt off to get there. And we worked out plenty of times together, and I seen how, you know, he was going. I said, well, I'm next because Jacksonville Jaguars is calling me every day, and they're checking in with me, and they, I will be drafted somewhere in the third or fourth when it's their turn. Here's Sean go. It's my turn coming up soon. And, you know, I got overlooked by a guy who never played in college football, USC guy who never played in at all, a down in college, got drafted.
Really?
So what is that? Yeah. So you would think, like, what happened? Well, that's out of my control. Maybe that's a connection he had, or maybe they didn't, you know, want my size. Who knows? But I would think as a guy who was ranked pretty well off would at least get a chance. And I just seen guys get drafted that really didn't think they had chances get a chance. So to fall all the way out of the draft, it's out of my control. You can just, you know, make the best of it. Thanks even for the opportunity to get picked up afterwards and just try to roll with it.
It's really interesting. But I'm looking at the guys that were drafted, linebackers that were drafted in your draft. Keith Rivers is the guy you're thinking of from USC. Played at Cincinnati. Lucky just had a couple of coffee for a little bit there. Didn't do too much. Jeremiah, I think, was the one. I don't know why I was thinking he was a USC guy, but he was Tennessee with New England. Curtis Lofton was a pretty good guy. Sean Crable had a decent career. Your team, were you guys the same class? You and Crable? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not seeing a lot of guys. Philip Wheeler played a long time. Xavier DB. Like, a lot of these guys are, you know, I think with the draft, it really is hit and miss a lot of times.
Right.
It just sucks you were a guy that nobody, like, hey, this dude played top level. He was all Big Ten. You know, it was –
the way that I looked at it, what my coach told me, my linebacker coach, as I talked to him the next year, and I was like, Coach, and he's been in the NFL for many years. And I said, Coach, what happened? What do you think that happened? He said, I don't know, Brick. He was like, that was a year of the tall linebackers coming up. 6'4" guys, they went on the edge. You know, he was like, yeah, I think you just got a bad deal. If you would have came out the next year, you would have been good. But this year, you know, you just was faced against, like you said, if you standing up in the cattle, you know, what do they call it? The cattle ranch or something like that, where they just sitting here auctioning them off.
Oh, okay.
If you look at us, if you're looking at, you know, sizes and you line the sizes up, 6'4", 6'5", 6'2", and all the way down the line to get down to me, if they got me at 5'11", these other guys are getting picked because they're using that 3-4 type of deal. And it's a different way that they were thinking at the time. And like I said, you know, I'm a ball hawk. Wherever the ball going, I'm going to take care of it.
And that's the thing that's real surprising with me, because everything I remember about you and how you played the game of football, you didn't play like you were – undersized linebacker. You played like you were a monster. You were making plays all over the field. And it's just like, do these people not watch film? They're not turning on and seeing you making plays all over the place, in the flats, down the field, in the backfield. Like, you're making plays all over where a team needs you to make plays at. Like, you were a captain of a great defensive team in the Big Ten. Like, I don't see what they would look at and be like, I don't want this guy on my team.
It's different to say, man. It's truly something that I was puzzled for a while now. A lot of people think that, you know, afterwards, the aftermath that you made it in the league, it's okay. Like, that really takes a hold of a young man who's been working his butt off since he was, you know, 8 years old to get to the NFL. And to lose the opportunity that you worked so hard for to get to that point. It's devastating. It's so devastating. It can make you be depressed. It can send you into, you know, where you don't even want to continue no more. So you think, you know, so like you said, like, man, I'm looking at you now, you still can play. I will probably still be ending, probably ending my career somewhere around a year now or later if I possibly was still playing. But to be,
a guy that be in the league for 13 years.
Exactly. If you possibly can. So to get cut short like that off of just comparisons and not having that guy on your team and develop him up, because every young guy that gets put in the draft and gets to a new team, you develop him up anyway. So what's the difference? You know, and that's really hurtful right there, because it's business. It turned into a business setting. You know, I remember being with the Detroit Lions, and I'm so grateful for the GM who knew that I played down the street, who knew how I played, and gave me the opportunity to be there. But guys are getting cut left and right. So I'm on 16 team. Guys are getting cut left and right. And guys are looking like, you know, they don't want to be there. I'm like, I don't care if we're on 16 or not. It's a blessing to be here, and I'm about to make the best of it. I'm about to go ham. And then when the season's over and the coaches get fired because it's business again, the new coaches come in, and the first thing they say in the meeting, the first meeting, introducing your defensive coordinator, he says, hey, I'm Gundry, and I'm getting rid of all short linebackers.
And he said that verbatim?
That was the first thing that came out of his mouth. That sticks home with me still to this day, because I looked around and said, oh, no, here we go again. But I need to call my agent. I'm about to get fired. He kept me and two other guys out of all the other guys. I went from number four to number one in the depth chart. But they were still making changes, you know. I tweaked my back a little bit on a weird catch from practice. And that's when you become a damaged can. As soon as you have to go to the trainer for anything, you're a damaged can. I don't have no money to invest in you, so why am I going to keep you on the team? You know? It's just weird like that, man. And like I said, it's a lot more to it. Like I said, you need mentors while you're in there. You need the right guidance. You need somebody to give you the opportunity, period. Give me an opportunity, period. And then coach me up. You coach me up. If I was good here with coaching and you bring me here, what do you think is going to happen? I can only get better.
Indeed. And that's the game of professional sports is it's a beast and a monster like that. It takes people in just as fast and spits them out faster. And it's because of like I'm a huge college basketball fan as well. Mm-hmm. And so many guys are one and done every year to go pro. But then there's only two rounds in 30 teams. So it's only 60 guys getting picked. And there'll be 80 one and dones on top of another 30, 40 guys that are upperclassmen, sophomores, another 40 or 50 juniors and seniors, you know, trying to go to ages as well. It's like it's a vicious cycle, man. It really sucks. Now, do you feel like you are more, if you were coming out the league today, is the NFL still the same way, or would they definitely love to have a linebacker, a player like you on the team and draft them?
You mean coming out or going in?
Coming out of, if you were a senior today.
Oh, if I was a senior, oh, definitely. I'm much wiser. Those experiences of being off and on the teams, the preparation that they require. If I can talk to my younger self who's coming out today, definitely key. I would be go to because for one, I would know the knowledge better than anybody else. You can't outbeat me if I know exactly where to put my guys at on these plays. My coach can only do one thing, is give me one play. I audible everything if I need to. I'm the Peyton Manning of the defense. So the coaches would see that. And then being bigger than 218 in college, and now I'm sitting, you know, 250s, You know, anywhere like that.
Now?
I'm 260. I'm down because I do bodybuilding. Ooh. But if I was sitting there, I would be probably playing, let's say I was probably playing around about 240, 245, right? If I was that size, then I got ready for my pro day yet and can run, I'm still running the 4.4 and I still can hit like that. If you couldn't pass me up on there. If you, now you, once again, they're looking at the size of guys. They're looking at the play of guys. If you pass me up, being my size and my strength and speed, then there'd be no place for it. But I seen that, I seen the draft change from the time I was in to now. I'd probably be better off coming out now.
Okay.
Last question about Michigan, if we're going to transition to where it all started. What made you pick Michigan? Like, of all the school, who else offered you back then that kind of had your eye, but you ultimately decided to go and be a Wolverine?
We were offered the Tennessee. Like I said, my family's down in Tennessee. So going down there, my coach from Barber High School, Coach Bass, and thank him to this day, he really put a lot of effort in to take kids to schools for these camps, these Nike camps, these university camps. He really was trying for guys to really get opportunities to get out of these bad neighborhoods. So to take us to Tennessee for our spring break and their spring break games, James Banks was still there.
You played against James Banks?
Yeah, I played against him too.
Okay. I didn't know if you had or not. Because he was, when he was a senior, you were a sophomore, I think, right? Yeah.
No, sophomore. Yeah, so I got to play against him my freshman, sophomore year. No, we actually played against him my sophomore year. And dude was, he was nice. He was really nice. So, you know, hats off to him. And he was a big motivation to going to Tennessee. And like I said, I dreamed of Tennessee for the longest to be in there. And we loved it. I remember getting called. We stayed up there on campus and got called at like 5 a.m. to come down. And I'm still trying to wipe the eye boogers out of my eyes. And they like, hey, we woke you up this early because we know who you are now. I'm like, huh? You know who you are. And they said my name again. I'm like, yeah, that's my name. It was like, well, we know who you are. We know what you're about. We know what you accomplished. We watch a film on you. You're amazing, blah, blah, blah. We want to offer you. I said, you can't offer me without offering him. That's Christian. And I said, we go everywhere as a package. And it was like, we watch film on him too. He's offered as well. As soon as I was offered by Indiana, Purdue, all the Indiana schools except Notre Dame. And that's why I had a tip on my shoulder. All the Indiana schools, other schools, got Iowa, we got Ohio State didn't offer. I went to a walkthrough for their school. They didn't even offer, so I kind of was like, to them as well. But for most part, almost all the majors, Michigan State, Western Michigan, Florida and Florida State had sent something up, and I was hoping they offered. It was just pretty much communication, but I can tell they was watching because I did some camps down that way with Ted Ginn and them down there.
Okay.
So that's how it got me the light in the South. But I told Christian to wait. I said, we were getting a lot of offers. And I said, wait, because you don't want to just grab anyone that won't accept us both. And we were starting to do our rounds of visitation. And once we had done, I think like we got done with two, it was Indiana, Purdue. I woke up the next one morning and I see in the papers, my brother had committed right along with Dez and everybody else.
To Purdue?
And I said, to Purdue, I said, I was so heated. And it's not because he made a choice. I don't think he made a bad choice. He made a good choice. But you always talk to each other. Being twins, you're supposed to talk to each other. And we go everywhere together. And I don't think he was trying to wait on me. I think he was like, I'm going to take the lead. And then you follow. And I was like, no, because I got a pretty much good judgment at what's going to be a good fit in both our positions. And you got to look at how they was pushing guys out for the league, what type of schemes and stuff they was running. I was looking at everything. So I just kind of waited, and I went on a couple more visits and everything like that. And once I got to Michigan, you could see the difference of being down in Tennessee it was live, playing around, doing everything. And then they practiced strong, but it wasn't organized. Like, pop, pop, pop. Even at Purdue, it wasn't organized. When you got to Michigan, it was no plan. Everything was freaking organized. And it was just like, all right, you didn't do it right. Start the whole practice over. I said, what? The whole practice got started over. And they just ran everything organized, bop, 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 again. And I said, you know what? I went up to Lloyd. I tried to play cool like I didn't want it. So when he got me in his office, you know, my mom kept edging me. And I was like, go ahead, tell him. I said, bye, mom. I said, yeah, play cool. And Lloyd kept, come on, son, tell me what you want. I'm like, nope, I'm good. We'll talk to you later. And she kept nudging me and said, so she already knew I wanted to. So I told him we'd be looking forward to make that offer. But I didn't tell nobody. So I went home, and when we announced it at school, Purdue was coming straight to the door. And when I was up there,
they had you too, huh?
They thought it had me because they got Christian. I was trying to pull Christian out of it and seeing that. But I told Lloyd that he have another spot. But because as soon as Christian locked in here, they gave that slot to somebody else over here. You know what I'm saying? Because they opened spots for whenever needed to. So Purdue definitely thought they had me locked in. They called me, like, when I say, hats off to the linebacker coach because he's one of the coolest dudes ever. But he called me every day for hours. We talked for hours.
So you mean to tell me the Michigan wide receiver room could have been Braylon Edwards, Mario Manningham, Steve Breston, and your brother?
Mm-hmm.
That's nuts.
That's why I told him he should have waited, because I know with a good quarterback and his potential, because Christian is a freak of nature. Yes. Nobody really – go take the – can you get the little key? Sam, you got the little key thing they put in there?
Yeah, your brother was definitely a freak of nature. And it really was unfortunate for the time of football that he played in. I said the same thing about Wimbo. If Wimbo and Christian would have played in today's Warren offense, oh my.
Yeah, it would have been. We were running offense at that time. So you can't beat four people that's getting 1,000 yards. It was no way.
It would be stupid. It would be stupid to put the ball in. Run the ball.
Exactly.
Like,
and when we did put it in there, it was just a – I don't even know, because as soon as we gave it right back, it was another touchdown. So, I mean, I feel their pain, you know, and Christian displayed it when he went and played off of these other teams. He was faster than me and my brother by 10. He could jump higher because he played basketball. So him and George Hill, best friends. They were best friends when we were little. And he would out-jump George all the time. Out-jump George. George just had a shot on him that Christian couldn't get. He's strong. I said, dude, you have all the makes of a killer receiver. Now, mind you, I go back in history. He didn't ever want to play football. That's why I said him and George are like this. He only wanted to play basketball. He got thrown into football because my mom, that's the way she kept us out of the street. When one dude, one sport, all her kids did the other sports together. So he had no choice but to do football while we all do football, because she didn't want him lingering behind at home. So he got thrown into the loop everywhere he went. But when he got to basketball, he outdid everybody.
See, shot I don't was remember him basketball at Warren, though.
He didn't want to play at Warren.
He want to play for Scott? Oh, he just
won't. No. When I say he would have been one of the top players on the team, I kid you not. I kid you not. When I say he went to the AAUs, he went to those and showed out every single time. George has a almost like a godfather. This is an older white man. I've been watching him since he was little and took him under his wing because George didn't have the access to go there, but he knew George was good. But he took Christian with him, and they did their thing all the time. And them two together, lights out. Lights out every single time. But he had no choice but to play football because us.
That is
me and my older brother.
That is really incredible. A great story I've never heard of. Like I was asking you before, like your brother's low key and I don't see him on social media or stuff like that, you know. And really, you, like I said, I've been trying to get with you. You're low key. You've been doing your thing. You know, you're doing bodybuilding now. And just like you're living in Texas, living a good, you've done well for yourself, man. I'm glad to see you doing the things you're doing. Heck, you posted a picture a while ago. I was like, man, is this dude going to be the next Mr. Olympia or something like that? Is that what you're working for right now?
I got the, well, we go to Twin first. Twin could have been a professional in basketball in the NBA if he would have stayed with it. The way him and George was playing, both of them would have went together. It's just timing, you know, just changed up and wherever God wants to go, that's where he went. And so he did very well in football when he got a chance to get in there and show what he did. Like I said, he's still a freak of nature in my book more than I am. I always tell him, don't ever think less of yourself because you didn't get the ball. Because if you ever had a chance to just throw you the ball constantly, the things you can do that we can't do, we still jealous. So that dude is still great to this day. For myself, I didn't want to just be the football body. You know, you're more solid and we got more, you know, explosive body built. Mm-hmm. And I kind of took the approach how The Rock did, kind of look into bodybuilding and you want to see yourself get to the best shape possible. And that was one way I looked at it. Another way was stress relief. You know, we talk about depression that people go through and you don't really know who goes through it. And I really didn't know I was going through it. So when it hit as a transformation in my life, I was going through a lot of ups and downs, you know. Certain things worked, certain things didn't work. Some things were overwhelming more than the others. And I'm the type of guy, well, I'm not going to talk about it. I'm just going to put it on my shoulders and try to outwork it because I'd have been through so much. But more importantly, when it hits, you can't do nothing else about it. And you try to stay close to your loved ones who care and support you more. Your faith plays a big role of getting you straight so that way you don't fall into a hole and do crazy stuff. And you see these guys out here, they call it, the brain trauma, all that type of stuff. Some stuff is that, and some stuff is just a whole letdown that you don't have the continuation that you've been fighting for since you were little. It's not a continuation you're going. So, you know, when you're 8, you're going to grade school, you're high school, and then you go to college and no. It's like a funnel. But when all that stops and now you got to make out life and you got to make choices and certain things don't work like you used to. And then you also got to figure out where I do with this aggression, what I do with this competitive edge and all this different stuff. Where do I put all this stuff, you know? A lot of guys don't hone it together. And then if it's running smoothly, you never really see it. But when it's not running smoothly, a lot of guys fail at different things, you know, just like we all do in life, but it seems a little bit harder when it comes from these type of athletes that's been built different. You know, a regular failure, fail, you know, go there, but these type of failures with these athletes hit a little different. So when mine hit, it took a toll on me where I didn't want to think of suicidal thoughts. I didn't want to quit. I'm not a quitter. And then I didn't want to really run to too many people. You know, I'm not really blasting my life out there like that to be running the tail and stuff on social media or getting everybody coming like that. I feel like I can find close knit to family support, my faith, get a little bit closer to that and make sure that helps me out, release a little bit probably through prayer. And where's my outlet? My outlet became lifting. I love lifting, but what type of lifting? I want to be in the best shape of my life. I want to exhaust myself too, so I don't have that energy to feel depression, to feel it's overwhelming to me in there. So I start working out twice a day. at 5 o'clock in the morning, no matter what. Set 3 alarms. In the evening, by the time I got home from work, I already had my bag ready, so I couldn't go home and be lazy. So I just went into lifting. And by the time I got home, all you can do is just shower, eat, and sleep, and start over. So where are you going to put that negative energy? It's gone. It's gone. There ain't no way it can stay. You don't really hear a lot of us talk about it, and I really don't really talk about it myself, but I share it to help other people out who might face it. You know, you must, once upon a time, you were the guy, you were the gal, and now things change. You know, in your life, you got to make adult-like decisions, you know, stability, close people around you, your mental health, where is that today, you know? It affects everybody, all the way down to kids, but nobody really talk about it. And if it's not all there, that's where you see tragedy happen. And I'm not going to be a victim of that. I'm much stronger. I didn't live through my war zone as a kid all the way up to now, so I can overcome it in some way, because I've been through enough to say, hey, you know, there's many things I can tell you that you already been through that can take you out. Could have took you out way before you got to this point, but this is not one of them. And when I found my... Huh?
No, go ahead. Continue.
I'm just saying this, you know, when I found faith, I wasn't a holy moly type of guy, anything like that. I learned on my own how faith worked for me. and then when you start figuring out what faith worth to you and how it can help with, I'm dealing with this right now, you know, how does that speak to me to release it and let it go? And, you know, getting that word was almost like a mentor talking to you. When you start to understand it biblically, because I didn't understand it biblically, I'm like, man, it's talking in a different language. But when it can come back around and you can understand it, it's almost like a mentor talking to you to let things go, to how to improve it, how to move forward. You know, it's a slow process. I'm still working on it till today, but it definitely took me out of a major hole right then and there. And the bodybuilder just became an outlet of that, basically result of that outlet, you know. I got with a group of good guys that really realized like how long I was doing it. Like, you've been doing 2-a-days for how long? Like, what? And then it was like, hey, all right, I know you're serious now, let's try something new. And when I tried the bodybuilding thing, I still didn't think I was at my best, but from outside looking in, you know, different people look at it. So when I was able to win, man, the wave of emotion that goes through you to win the whole entire state, the biggest event for the whole entire state, major stage through the bodybuilding world. And for people to really not understand what it took you to get there, this wasn't like football. This wasn't like anything else. This was personal.
Yeah, it's you. It's you. You don't have anybody else to. I mean, if you go out there and play an amazing game on defense, you don't give up no points. It's 0-0, and the offense gives up a pick 6. You have nothing that you can do to control that, and that can cost you the game. And it's stuff like that. Like, you are in control of everything that happens, so you have more pride in that accomplishment. Like, it's silly for me to even ask, you know, you've won bowl games, you've won state championship before you, and then you won this. Which one are you more proud of? That's stupid of me. That one, because that one took so much time and effort. You just can't roll out of bed one day and say, hey, you know, I'm going to go off and win this bodybuilding competition. No, you have to put in the time and effort. Like you said, two workouts a day, 3 workouts a day, for God knows how long, eating the right things, making sure you're putting the right things into your body, staying disciplined, most importantly, to allow yourself to continue to rise, to get to the point to where you are, could even be considered to be a finalist. And then within all that, making sure you are in prime condition on that day when you're being judged to stand out the best amongst Lord knows however many people you're going up against. So, man, that's a really phenomenal accomplishment, man. I'm so proud of you. I did not know you had struggled with that, but that is a great story. And hopefully somebody that listens to this interview and you saying this helps them out. I definitely know some guys that would love to hear you say stuff like that to them. I'm pretty sure some other people that may listen to this may want to have you talk to other people that they know. You have a great talent, man. And like, I'm so glad you fought those battles within you that hurt so many other players and they don't have the opportunity to overcome those hurdles and they succumb to the battles within themselves that they aren't letting people know. I'm so glad you didn't go that route, man, for sure. Cause you are it, with me and my show and my platform, I love to talk to people and give them their flowers while they're still here. It's the reason why I had Coach Willen on a year or so before he died to let him tell his story. That's the reason why I bring guys on like Coach Wright and Coach Tutsi on, or bring players that people don't often hear from, because those guys right there, they often don't have the opportunity to tell their story and get their just due now that their careers and everything that they're not playing. Because a lot of times guys will ask me all the time, like, hey man, why didn't that guy make it to the league, man? It's like, it's tough. And people ask me those questions, like, do these people think that these guys are failures? And I'm thinking, and probably they do, but they don't understand, like, these guys are success stories just getting to that level, just getting the opportunity to even be at that point. And so, like, I'm extremely proud of everything you've done, Brick. Like, truly extremely proud. And, like, I'm honored to have you a part of my program. I don't even know. We've talked for an hour. We haven't talked one thing about Warren football yet, but your story is so incredible. Your story is literally so incredible, man. I don't even want to go there. We can bring you back for a part two later and talk more Warren football. But man, look, what you are doing is so inspiring, man. Like, I'm sitting here almost about to tear up, because it's like, I've always said I'm a huge basketball fan. So Reggie Miller going up, hometown legend. If Reggie Miller were to walk in here right now, tears, crying, emotional, because that's childhood hero. Like, I do this podcast because of guys in your class, because of you, because of Stephen Willis, because of Courtney Nunn, because of Desmond Tardy. You guys gave me the love for Warren football that's literally changed my life forever. I'm not in this job right now that I have if it weren't for Warren football, man. Right. So I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for saving your life and being an inspiration for others. Truly, man. Truly.
I appreciate it, brother. I'll tell my story from ground up. I've been wanting to write a book. It's too much detail in there. Growing up on the east side, had a fairgrounds, gang fiddly, edit neighborhood. Every other house was either a trap house or a gang member house. And living in that type of environment, I still ask my dad and my mom, like, what the hell was y'all thinking? But to have siblings out in that life, to fight for your life every day, you just thought that was it. And I didn't see close calls so many times. Even the day I got out of college, I was standing at gunpoint in front of my parents at gunpoint, gun right in my head. And if it wasn't for God, for all these things I'd have been through, even this last journey of checking my own self, I wouldn't know how to take it. And that's why I said it's a lot in detail to go over. I go over my story later and really let people know how I overcame a lot. My brothers overcame a lot. And if it wasn't for the sport, I'm telling you again, if it wasn't for this sport that we love so much, you wouldn't see this version of me here. And I probably wouldn't even last to the age I am now, just because that's how much of a lifestyle that can snatch us away. And I wear my brother on my back because he was snatched away in that life. But it made me stronger. I get to tell, you know, you guys a story, share with you guys one day. I get to tell my kids one day, you know, this is what your father endured. So when y'all think nowadays of what y'all dealing with, just think somebody out there right now has it harder. They have it a lot harder, and they facing that. So be grateful for what you have, and respect for others. And it will definitely come back around to you that you can be able to one day help somebody else that definitely need it, that you don't even know that's dealing with it. So I'm going to keep sharing. I'm going to keep doing a little bit more. I'm trying to get out now to be back myself and touch other people, motivate other people any shape or way I can. I was a little bit shy to really speak about the personal life, but, you know, this new me, I don't care. You're going to get the full version of me. You're going to get to see. You're going to get to understand. And then maybe I can touch, you know, somebody out there in some different way. And then really just keep going. If it's going to speaking at events, speaking in church, catching somebody, they walking into the store, whatever it is, I'm not shy enough that I cannot relate to everybody out there. You know, women, I got stories for y'all too, dealing with, you know, my own mother, sisters, that, you know, I done been through enough, just seen enough that it can touch somebody and be a motivator. So I'm going to get back out there. Maybe it's my calling to be a motivated speaker. Maybe it's my calling just to, you know, open up my door where people don't get to see that and be like, wow, okay, now I really know how it goes down.
Yeah, that's truly incredible here. There's a, because I am a spiritual person, and God dang, there's a saying I found about a month. It must have been about 2 months ago, and I'm trying to find it now here. It's a saying that says, God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies those that are called. And I definitely feel like he called you to do your thing, and you're doing it, my brother. And my hat's off to you. I truly feel like you're a blessing to many. And I hope you continue to just use his work through you and help inspire and create more people around you that feel the same way or are willing to step out and let their story be told. And it's honestly quite interesting. 2 years ago, when the first time I was able to get Darren Evans on the show, he was feeling the same way, almost the exact same way. And, you know, he decides to finally come out of his hole that he built around himself, being shy, not talking to anybody, and just, you know, letting his story build. And it was so great to hear that from former greats like yourself, because there are guys like you in our hallways and on our team right now that still struggle and going through the same battle as you are. And like I said, hopefully them hearing this from you will mean more than giving them a bunch of Balenciagas or Gucci shoes or Yeezys or whatever, you know. It's so much more worth to them, because you were a guy that were in their shoes at their point from the same side of town that made it and struggled and made it again and still struggle and still making it. And like I said, man, it's a great story. I appreciate having you on. Hopefully in another month or so, Michigan after we win the national championship, we can have us on, have you on again, maybe just in person.
Oh yeah.
And celebrate and cheer and talk more warm football than we did today. But this is great. This is absolutely great, man. I thank you again for sharing and giving me part of your time. Like, I'm very happy. I'm in tears, and I don't know if you can see, but I was actually tearing up just saying that, because like, I don't think about like you guys, I didn't know much about Warren football until I got to Warren in 2002. And I've said this on the show a few times. Like, when you guys lost that regional game against Ben Davis, it was making me emotional. Like, I didn't know many of those guys on the team, but man, I felt the pain of those guys. And seeing you guys come back, the guys that are able to come back the next year and win it all, and then me being able to be a part of the next three title teams, that was so special. But my love was born through you guys. So, like, I do everything I do with this show in honor and respect to you guys. Like, truly, truly, man, thank you. I can't thank you enough.
Pleasure. And can't go unnoticed to give you thank you for the hard work you put in. We remember you running around the school with your little notepad. Running around school with your little notepad, asking 1,000 questions. You're like, man, I didn't answer that question already. And you're like, come on, this, what about this question? I said, it sounded like the first question. Well, okay, maybe this way. And I'm like, you know, and all you can do is just laugh. And you know what? It tells something inside of you to keep pushing, that, you know, years from now, that you'll be even higher up than where you are, because that same drive that we gave you, the energy you gave you, you gave it back to us, and you're still giving it to us now. Like, you interviewing me all over again. I remember the interview you gave me back in school too. But the interview you gave me now, as a grown man, it's definitely good to revisit the Warren family. It was definitely good to hear, you know, how you spit out all these stats again, all his stuff again. And it's good to just have this conversation. So it's a pleasure, man, to see you grow. It's a pleasure to see you still being Warren Nation all day, that, you know, these kids don't understand how much you put into it to even get exposure like we should have. And put it back out there and get these, some of these guys, coaches, you know, and students, even the ones that lived it all, we all get to revisit that moment of the greatness. We all get to see how everybody doing today, which is a pleasure. And, you know, I will always love to do this, man. I will always love to do this.
I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. Hope you and your family all have a great holiday season. Be safe. Merry Christmas to all you guys, man. God bless.
All right, brother. Take care.
Take care. Ladies and gentlemen, True Warrior Football's one of the best interviews I've done so far. Legendary linebacker Chris Graham. Thanks again, man.
Man, what an incredible, incredible talk that was. Thank you once again, Chris. You know, just hearing your story and the obstacles you've overcome to get to the point you are, to where you are a championship winning bodybuilder. That is incredible. That's absolutely incredible, man. That's so inspiring. Definitely so inspiring. And I'm glad you were able to share with everybody here on my show and this platform. And hopefully your story will go out. And I know it will. It's going to inspire someone. It's going to change somebody's life. I absolutely know it. I appreciate you once again. Like I said to you during the show, and like I said to guys all the time, you know, your actions on the field really sparked my love and passion for Warren football. And if it weren't for that, I'm not sitting here doing this show right now. I'm not in the job I have right now. I'm not done and accomplished so many great things in life. Who knows what other path could have been laid out before me. But because of my ties to the Eastside, because of my ties to the program, because of my deep love and passion for the black and gold, for the Warriors, for that W on our helmets, I'm here today and doing what I love. And that can never, ever, in my eyes, be understated for its importance. And as long as I live, I will definitely honor all you guys. And of course, the members of your team and your class, but really everybody that came before you and after you. Because all those guys, you know, they went out there and did something that I wasn't able to do. I wasn't talented. You know, I'm not an athlete and stuff like that. I wasn't good enough to strap on the pads, you know, lace up the cleats, you know, and go out there and pop pads with them. Nah, I'm not that good. I wish. But for the guys that did it and represented and made it possible for me to be a state champion time and time again, I was able to see so many guys give their all for our program and really bring back trophy after trophy after trophy to the East Side and make people on our side of town proud to call themselves Warriors despite everything else that's going on in their life right now. Because Lord knows, if you go up on the East Side, there's a lot more things going on in your life than what's going on at that football field. A lot more. And for everyone that's been in those shoes and experienced those things, that level of adversity that is very unique to our side of town, very unique to our community, and overcome and rose up and say, you know what, I'm not going to let that keep me from being great. I applaud you. I commend you for doing that, man. And that's why I do what I do. To pay honor, homage, tribute to every single person in our program. I'll never meet all of you. I'll never meet all of you. But just know what I do is for you and for others that's coming after you. And lastly, I also want to give a college update, or, you know, our guys going to college. Congrats to Mr. Echols, Dewan Echols, just signed his letter of commitment to play football at Ball State. He's the next Warden great to go and play there. And as a defensive end, you know, I'm wondering if he's going to be able to chase down quarterbacks and chase down the sack record that our very own Anthony Wimbush set a few years back, and, you know, be another great defensive line great like Wimbush was, like Josh Posley was, and Darnell Smith before him, and just another great monster from defensive line coach Corey Clark, my very good friend. So congrats to him on taking the step to the next level. Best of luck to you this year, or best luck to you, I should say, moving on. And I will definitely look forward to following the rest of your career. And also, congrats to David Bell once again, AP First Team All-American. That's an outstanding accomplishment once again for him. I like their awards just keep racking it up. And he announced this week that he was going pro, which I felt like was something that we all knew was going to happen this season. But he made the announcement official, so congrats to him. I do not know if it's been announced if he's going to play in the bowl game that Purdue plays in, but I hope, you know, he's able to give all Purdue fans, you know, one more amazing game to remember him by. So best luck to David, and looking forward to hearing your name called on draft night. And lastly, my guy's like a brother to me, that I gladly call my brother at any chance, in any moment, Michael Tutsey, had a amazing game this past weekend against East Tennessee State. Him and his Bison won a game. I think it was like 28-3, 27-3, something like that. And Michael was a defensive player of the game. had about 6 or 7 tackles, but it was his interception in the game. I want to say it was the third quarter that was real key for the team, which was his first interception in about a year and a half, almost 2 years. And really since Michael's first full year being a starter, offenses know not to pass in Michael's direction. You know, very often Michael have 7, 8, you know, tackles and stuff like that, but very rarely any opportunities to make a play on the ball. And when I went up there a few weeks ago and I sat there and watched South Dakota do everything they could but pass everywhere Michael was not, I was like, man, these guys just aren't going to give you a chance. Like, nah, it's been like that for a year and a half now. It is funny because when they went on their last deep playoff run, when they won the national championship, when Trey Lance was quarterback, he had like 3 or 4 games in a row where he had interceptions and ended the season with 6 or 7 interceptions. Just an amazing season for him. But offenses learn, you know, hey, do not pass where 25 is, all right? So Michael and his Bison, North Dakota State Bison, they face off against JMU at home this Friday night. It's going to be on ESPN, so make sure you are tuned in to watch Michael and his team for a chance to go and face off against somebody for a chance to win a national championship. It's going to be a very, very good game. JMU is another national powerhouse at the FCS level. And, you know, it's going to be a really good game. It's going to be a really good game. So best of luck to Michael and his Bison. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, you listen to another great episode of True Warrior Football. I'm your host, Corey the Kid Smith. Warrior Band, take us away.